This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's podcast discussion on future staffing. This is going to be a podcast where three legal professionals will discuss future staffing at law firms. My name is Luke Schneblin, and I'm with Shook, Hardy & Bacon in Kansas City, and I'll be the moderator for today's discussion. And we are also pleased to have Jeff Brandt and Mitch Owens. Jeff, would you like to say a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Jeffrey Brandt. I'm the Chief Information Officer at Jackson Kelly, headquartered in Charleston, West Virginia. We're about a 200-attorney firm with 12 offices. I also happen to be the editor of the Pinhock Law Technology Daily Digest.
My name is Mitch Owens. I'm the Chief Technology Officer at Gilbert & Tobin. We're headquartered in Sydney, Australia. I have approximately about 400 lawyers spread throughout three locations.
Great. So we'll go ahead and get started with today's conversation. And I should let you know my firm is about 400 attorneys, 1,200 total with staff. And I'm going to bring in some of the HR side, and Mitch and Jeff are going to really be talking about some of the IT side. So we hope to have a really collaborative conversation to give you the full picture of where we think the future is going with regards to staffing at law firms. So today's format, we're just going to go over a few topics and kind of bat the ball back and forth, really talk about, you know, from our perspective, where we think future staffing is headed. So we'd like to start off with kind of level setting. So what are the current skill sets needed in the legal market? Or what are the current skill sets that we see in the legal market? Jeff, do you want to start us off?
Sure. I mean, the traditional set is really kind of operational pieces. You know, what do I have in terms of servers? What do I have in terms of OS and applications? And what are the primary applications of the firm? So we've got specialists in DMS and accounting and workflow and other kinds of tools. Some larger firms certainly have development groups, and so you've got aspects of programming in various firms. They really are kind of operational, and I'll use the term plumbing, because we'll come back to talk about more about plumbing in a few minutes.
Mitch?
Yeah, and sort of I agree there. So it's basically, you know, supporting, you know, what's known as the lights on operations of the business. So you serve a desktop network from an infrastructure perspective, your traditional application support, so for on-premise systems, whether it be your CRM or DMS. And it's a very sort of methodical approach to delivery. So, you know, the traditional sort of waterfall mentality, identify products or technologies, you know, run them through a process to get them in. So it does take some time.
Yeah, and I'd really add, you know, I agree with what both of you guys said, and I'd add some of the operational things from the HR side. And I'm even the training department. We've really found a way to meet the needs regardless of where the physical location of whether it be the trial team or the attorney. I'm utilizing some of the newer technologies, and I know we're going to get into that in some of the next questions, but I think that the current skill set and the skill set that's needed has really grown exponentially. I've seen in the past 3 to 5 years probably, with really the ability to support people, not only in your physical office location, but if they're at a trial site or they're working remotely or if they're meeting with a client. And I think that is something that will continue to grow. So with that, gentlemen, what do you think the next set of skills will look like? Jeff, do you want to go first again?
Sure. I think where we're moving is really away from the technology. And that's, of course, an odd thing to say since we're all technologists in one shape or another. But I think if you look at the three-legged stool, and I'm a huge fan of people, process, and technology, the technology part is becoming less of an issue, and it's becoming much more a people and process piece. Certainly, we're inserting new pieces of technology. We're all upgrading to the latest and greatest in Microsoft or iManage or NetDocuments products, but it really, I think, is coming down to shifting more away from that plumbing, the infrastructure, the support of the daily stuff. And don't get me wrong, the trains have to run on time. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. But I think it's really the value added. The way I put it to our attorneys is, you know, we need to shift IT more into the business and practice of law. That's where the return on the investment is going to be. That's where we're going to really make our firm distinguish it from others. That's where we're going to have the value of the technology and the workflows and everything as part of that. So I think it really is kind of shifting from that plumber, lights on, to really more the analyst, more of the workflow specialist, more of the translation between the technology and the workflows and the business and the practice of law.
So I have a follow-up question to that. What is that pitch to the attorney, or how do you present that's needed?
Well, I think in my firm, it's actually been a pretty easy pitch. When we talk about, you know, what adds value to them, the fact that we have, you know, changed three people's names and put them in the right OU containers and successfully done yet another backup or copy files from one location to another, those are all good things. But it really doesn't impact their daily work life. When you talk to them about, well, geez, how can I add a workflow into what you're doing? How can I help you get information faster, more quickly? How can I help you retrieve stuff in a way that makes more sense? When you're looking at the movement away from billable hour to alternative fee arrangements, you end up with, you know, every minute ends up being even a little more precious. So you look at, you know, how can I do something faster? How can I help locate the resource, the person, the information that you need in order to get them the information, get them the decision points, so that in turn, you know, we end up with a very happy client in the end.
Mitch, what do you have to add?
I sort of agree with that, you know, wholeheartedly. So, you know, we're sort of seeing now the evolution of the technology sort of player within the law firm, going from what you'd call a pure backroom operator, where they sort of sit away from everyone and no one really knows what they do. What you're sort of starting to see is sort of key technology people immerse themselves into the practice groups for a number of reasons. That could be to work with clients on sort of non-legal queries, because, you know, obviously a lot of our clients are in-house counsel and they sort of are seen as a cost center of their own organization, so don't have access to technology consulting, you know, our lawyers do. Also the fact that it sort of goes back to that billing and time pressures. The clients are expecting a lot more for a lot less. You can't sort of raise your rates, you know, because potentially you'll lose clients. So you've got to find a more efficient way to do work. So what we're finding is there's a lot of integration between sort of teams now. We're putting process people within the practice group to try and identify what we call the process of law. And not that the process of law is replaceable from an IP perspective, but it's a repetitive thing, you know, in something like a share purchase agreement. It's the same sort of step. So how can we sort of build technology or deliver technology to streamline that process and take away some of the inefficient pieces of that work around chasing either the client or an internal lawyer for an update and finding out where a matter's at and being able to present that easily to a partner on the matter so they know straight away with the information at hand. So we're seeing a lot of that process optimization really, and you know, that leads into, you know, things like legal project management, which has been around for a while, but in Australia, it seems to be a bit of a buzzword at the moment. And it's presenting back to the client where matters are in certain phases, and that's delivered through sort of technology. And we sort of know the lawyers do the value work in the legal piece, but being able to present that back to a client in a coherent way sort of requires a little bit of different skill set. So what we're finding there is we're embedding other sort of skill set people in those areas.
So you talked about kind of forming teams. What does that process look like? I mean, do you have a legal project manager for each team, or how is that managed?
So at the moment, we've got a legal project management team that's made up of three people. What we have found, they've all got project management background, but they all come, they at some point in their lives, they were practicing lawyers. So they sort of really understand both sides of the fence. We do not sort of immerse the project managers within a practice group. They sort of sit in a sort of a consolidated team in the operations area, but we then sort of go out and identify with partners or practice groups that are really looking and really interested in to take on this project management piece. And that might be a client request. And then we immerse them in there sort of at the request of a partner. So it's a new piece for us, but it's having a lot of success with some of our big clients. because, you know, they are large corporates and that's how they're used to working. And they're actually enjoying the experience of actually now being able to track where a matter is at, whether it be a specific phase in the matter, who's working on it, who their key contacts are, even things like up-to-date billing and WIP as well. So, yeah, so the way we sort of do it, it's like at the moment a request thing with a view from it. Like, you know, it's going to be like a bit of a training perspective. I think as people sort of see the value that that's going to offer both the practice group and also the client, you'll sort of see more and more people want to take it on and be going, oh, I'd like to try that. I'd like to try that. And that's what we're seeing now.
That's great. And that's something that we do here at Shook is we've recently had three people move into a, it's called a division project manager role. And that person in each of the divisions, they've really worked very well to knock down some of what is historically been called silos, and they've also been able to integrate the IT project manager into the processes that they have on the legal teams. And like you've said, we've seen some tremendous successes, and some client team might be doing some great work, but they really didn't have a good venue to share what they were doing. And by having these three people in the same role, there's really this collaborative model that helps, you know, kind of streamline some of the things that each of them are doing. And also, when there's a new solution or a new piece of software being implemented for a given client or just firm-wide, it's really clearly communicated to all users, and it's been very beneficial. So I know we kind of hinted at it, but how, and Jeff, you wanted to talk maybe a little bit more about it, but how people, processes, and new technology is changing the present law firm. Do you have anything else to add?
I think there's a couple of different pushes. I mean, I think you both alluded to the fact that law firms like to think of themselves as immutable, but you end up with a lot of client pressures. And I'm willing to bet that maybe some of your initiatives when you're talking about project management are coming from the same source that we see, that's the client push. You know, it's less a function sometimes of trying to distinguish yourself or your firm, but rather responding to people in the process that your clients want to force on you. Mm-hmm. You know, the billable hour is no longer acceptable. The manual workflow is no longer acceptable. The volume of data, when we talk about things like e-discovery in particular, is so drastic these days that, you know, you can't even contemplate doing something in a manual fashion. But I think, you know, when you look at how things are changing, how things are evolving, you know, there's only so much you can do to a laptop and mobile technology. There's only so much that can be done at this point to a smartphone. And I think, you know, those technological increments are getting less and less. I mean, perhaps there'll be some kind of major breakthrough here in the future as we add in artificial intelligence or something. But right now, the technology is not really leapfrogging like it has in the past. So I think that coupled with the client pressures, look to go back to the people and the process piece. You know, I don't want to change out my document management system. So what do I do to use it better, more efficiently? You know, I focused on the technical training on how it's used, but how do I get people invested better in the virtual client file, in the records management aspect, in the filing of emails and so on? And a lot of times that's really not the technology piece, it's the people and the process piece. And I think demographics, as they shift from older to younger, I mean, generally across the board, and I have to make that as my disclaimer because I know a lot of older attorneys that are very technically savvy and some younger ones that quite frankly aren't. As people's lifestyles change, as those technologies get integrated into their daily lives, that backs up when you get into the firm into, well, what processes should we be having? What training do people need in order to, you know, be able to move things forward?
Yeah, you sort of touched on it earlier, mentioned breaking down the silos. And that's what, you know, these changing technology and the people we're looking at and the processes we're doing is actually delivering to the practice group. So traditionally what you'd find is a client would be sort of, even though they're a client of the firm, would be a client of the practice group, and it'll all sort of be managed sort of within that practice group. And if they need to bring specialists from the other areas, they sort of would, but you mean they were sort of like limited with respect to knowing those skill sets. And what we're sort of seeing now, say, for example, with the introduction of that legal project management sort of team, is that as they're sort of getting immersed into certain matters, you know, those certain matters grow, whether it's a big M&A or something like that, and it requires sort of different skill sets and different specialists. So it allows sort of someone early on in the piece to identify that skill sets outside the core practice group are going to be required. So it gives us the opportunity to have a look at the capacity of people with those skill sets to line them up for the work. And it's sort of done in a little bit more orderly fashion as opposed to the 11th hour going, all right, we've got this deadline tomorrow, we forgot about this, but it still needs to be done and you're pulling an all-nighter. So we're sort of seeing some tangible results there from a lawyer resource perspective in that work planning is a little bit better. When it gets to late in the deal, it does still become manic as its nature. But the planning to that point is identifying what needs to be done, who needs to be involved, and when it needs to be done. And yeah, as I said, the process improvement piece, I don't think can be undersold. It's not a sexy aspect of a role. No one likes to talk about process, and lawyers especially don't like to realise or think that their job is just the process. But, you know, as Jeff touched on, it's about creating those efficiencies. So, you know, this is how it's really changing, is that we're sort of going in and mapping out a process of a specific function of a practice group or a lawyer, and with the intent not to change the lawyer involvement, but it's a lot around it is data transfer or how we transfer that data to other people or how we process and analyze that data. And as a result, it's streamlining the little bits in between the data movement effectively, you know, from one system to another or from one lawyer to another. And being able to do that is creating sort of efficiencies without taking work away from the lawyer. So they're actually realizing now that technology sort of and process improvement is helping their job. And what we are finding as a benefit of that is that we now have lawyers coming to us going, oh, actually, we've done this process map a while ago and it works, but I think I've got something else we need to do. So they're now bringing work to, you know, the process optimization team or technologies team going, there's surely a way that I can do this better. I shouldn't have to sit here and go control C, control V to cut and paste data amongst a number of systems all day, every day.
I think it's partly, it's a realization that the partnership between differing kinds of professionals, whether it's project management, whether it's technology, whether it's workflow, I mean, we seem to be hiring more non-lawyer specialists, non-lawyer professionals to handle some of those pieces and parts, that partnership piece. I mean, that's kind of unheard of. You go back in time far enough and lawyers did lawyer work and everything else was separate from that. And I think you're exactly right, Mitch, that workflow piece, each expertise has a portion of the puzzle. And so, you know, I can't do the work because I'm not a lawyer, but I've got expertise in workflow and project management. And so I can bring that to the table and the partnership of the two, again, people process with technology, underlying probably a good portion of it, ends up with a better result all around.
So I have a follow-up question to that. How do you guys share these efficiencies that you realize across the firm or to different offices or to larger audience? Does that information get shared?
I'll start with that. We certainly share that. The best sharing that you can get is when the attorneys are talking to the other attorneys saying, yeah, we're piloting this and we're doing this, and wow, you really need, you know, you can't have Joe or you can't have Peggy because they're in my department and they're working with me right now. Mm-hmm. But that's the best way to really get the word out, yeah, is when you're, you know, you can explain to the executive committee or in a general partnership piece, but when the lawyers start talking about what it's doing for them, how it's transforming and enhancing their practice. And then we've actually had a couple of clients step in as well, talking about what the value they see of new ways of us thinking and delivering service to them. So an internal lawyer is great. Having a client come back and tell your attorneys that, you know, this is the kind of thinking that we want, this is the kind of approach we want on our matters, that's really icing on the cake.
Yeah, and just to jump on the back of that, so that is something that we sort of actively do. And say, for example, we take the technology piece, so we've delivered a number of tool sets to some of our lawyer group. And when we were developing those tools, we worked with them to understand the process that they went through. We developed the tool and got it to a point where it was an operational ready prototype. So while we were doing that, to quantify the value to the legal practice, we had someone using the tool set while someone was using the existing process. And we'd done that for a period of 3 months. It seemed like a bit of a duplication of work, but the reason there was so we could actually quantify that, because that was one of our very early tool creations that we made. So we sort of wanted to be able to report back and say, well, here's what we're saving. And what we found, I mean, as I said, a lot of it's identifying process and using technology to solve for that. The problems and the processes we were solving for was a lot of the time would have been paralegal work or legal work that would have been written off, because we know the partner's not going to fill the time for that amount of work going, that just took too long. So it was a lot of write-downs and write-offs. So from there, we're able to quantify the difference between using the tool and using the existing process to create sort of a delta. And from there, we keep tracking records of the use of this tool and what they're doing. And then we extrapolate that out based on that delta. And then that gives us a commercial figure saying, in this case, it would have been work that was written off, because this type of work was always written off. So we can actually say, well, we haven't necessarily saved you this much money or the client this much money, but we've avoided wasted manpower in doing this process. And therefore, you're having to write off this value of dollar.
That's still a great way to do an ROA, Mitch.
Yeah. So, and we do that now with most of the tools we create, and for that reason, so we can report back and continually show the value of these tool sets and sort of get us what I'd call value engineering into the next product. Because when we're sort of rolling these out or speaking to different partners, we can say, here's what we've done. And that's how a lot of our work's come now, because there is a lot of write-downs and there's a lot of pressure on the lawyer community around their billing type, moving from the old time-based billing into more fixed fee. And as we move more to fixed fee billing, it's going to become increasingly necessarily be a lot more accurate in estimating and quoting on the process of law, because you don't have that flexibility anymore. So if you have offered a fixed fee, realistically, from a lawyer or a legal team, their profits are in the margins. So if they're burning a lot of their margin on unnecessary process-driven work, that's their profit for that matter gone. So it ends up not becoming a profitable matter. So it's like, do you really look at it?
Well, and that's, I think, we've looked at parts of that as well. I would kind of clarify it as, we look at commodities work or what is dropping into commodities work, and every firm's got that kind of work where they look at it and go, do we really want to be doing this kind of work? We're trying to look at it from that process point of view. Is it going to the right people? Is it working in a good time frame? Do we have access to the information we need? And trying to help determine whether or not that kind of commodities work is something that we can actually turn around and make a good profit at.
Well, that's some great dialogue, guys. I want to move on and really kind of shift gears. So I think another title for this podcast could probably have been succession planning, because future staffing is really just planning for who will leave and replace that person. Or if there's a new role created, like a legal project manager, how do you go out and find those people? And I would say, to answer first, in the Kansas City market, we had two large law firms move their back of the house operations from the coast to Kansas City. So there was a real stretch of need for people with legal experience to fill vacancies that these law firms had. And I would say that one thing that Shook did and was very unique with was we brought in and have really continued to do so, looked at filling some of our administrative staff or professional staff roles with people from other industries. The legal market in and of itself in Kansas City is very close and tight-knit, at least from the professional staff side. I know a lot of other people that work at all the law firms in town, and through ILTO, we get along all right. But I think that as we see people leave roles or leave to move to other companies, we've found success in bringing people from other companies and integrated their ideas into the legal industry, because there are a lot of these people and processes, things that we're talking about, and even technology that might not have been introduced in the law firm environment. And I know that many law firms play on the safe side of technology before they move to a certain product. So some of the people we're bringing in have potentially years of experience with some of this type of project management, or maybe even working with a piece of software. Do you guys have any other specific examples, maybe from the IT leadership side?
Well, I'd argue that security, I mean, security people are in short supply everywhere, every industry. So you then take the legal industry, which has tendency to be smaller organizations, and there's, of course, some large mega firms, but the bulk of the firms are much smaller. And so, you know, the idea of getting somebody that's got law firm security experience is pretty much non-existent. So you have to go outside the market. And I think it's, again, one of those things, as things have shifted and lawyers have found the value in partnering with more professionals to work into the business and the practice of law, I think that that's true, that you welcome many more other industries, if you will.
And I'll sort of agree with that as well. And I'm doing a little bit of that myself. Like my last couple of hires, depending on what their roles were predominantly outside of the legal community. I myself am outside the legal community. I spend a lot of my time in banking and finance. It's what you see when basically you have two different cultures mixed. You start to bring the best of both together. And that's what you'll sort of see in that skill set. Someone who comes from outside the legal community from a technology perspective or project management perspective, that they come from organizations that are probably a lot of the time are corporates who have very rigorous process and procedure around the project management, process management, and just general day-to-day operations. And they've got a different way of thinking. And, you know, security is an interesting aspect you raised, Jeff. Yeah, they are in short supply. So, and really, you know, you're wanting, in security, for example, you're wanting a person who understands the requirements that are put on the legal firm from your client perspective. And a lot of the time, the clients, your corporates, your banks, and predominantly. So it's always good to get someone from that skill set because they can sort of help you jump ahead of the curve. And then with respect to, you know, some of the other stuff, for example, legal project management, it's been around legal for a few years and sort of starting to get a formalized title and people are using it a lot more. But project management, whether it be manufacturing, engineering, trade, or other professional services, has been around for a long time. And, you know, I mean, it's a pretty well-established culture within those organizations. So the benefit there of being able to translate someone from outside the organization into a role like that instantly gives you someone who understands how to deliver and work within that process of project management. And what you sort of find, I feel, in law sometimes is everyone wants to have their say on how something runs. But, you know, what we're talking about is the efficiencies and, you know, making it run a little bit more smoothly. And you need those people who understand how the process should run and can help you put in place those pieces, because otherwise you could end up having four different or five different project management approaches based on the partner you're talking to.
Well, and I'll make it unanimous because the last couple of hires I've done have also been outside of legal. And I think there's, you know, sometimes it's just good to have that exterior view. I can remember, not this firm, but a previous firm, I hired a project manager who had no legal experience. So, you know, everybody had to come to the table kind of defining why we were doing things the way we were doing it. And, you know, because the person had no background, they couldn't say it was good, bad, or indifferent, but they raised a lot of questions. And you look at it and go, well, you know, why are we doing it that way? Well, yeah, historically we've done it that way. Well, here's the way a different industry does, and they're able to deliver twice as fast. Is there any real reason for us to continue to do it the way we've always done it, simply because that's the reason behind it, because we've always done it that way? So I think it's always good to have that challenged and ask the question, why?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I think that needs to be part of every law firm interview questionnaire is how would you answer if someone says we've always done it that way? Because in my firm, I know that it's come a long way in the past few years and we have a new chair and a new COO. So we're overcoming a lot of that. But I face that question or just response quite a lot. And just like you all, I brought some people onto my team and really challenged them to create, you know, new ideas, whether it be just a slightly different way, you know, get them barely over the edge of how they've always done it. And then maybe they'll slowly adopt away from the dark side. But I think that if you can answer that question, you'll be set up for success regardless of what team you're on. I would ask you guys a follow-up question. What roles besides legal project management and security do you see are kind of the next step for law firms? Are there any that you see, or are there any that you see going away?
Mitch, you want to start with that?
So look, probably the skills that we're sort of looking for and starting to evolve, a lot of it's around data. There's a lot of content, a lot of information sort of coming out, and it sort of really requires people's skill sets that can manipulate that data and analyze that. We're sort of starting to see, you know, the advents of systems around AI and machine learning. They're all data driven, but you know, there are some smarts behind them, but you sort of really, your outputs of those systems are really going to be based on your inputs. So that's sort of going to require someone to structure it in a way that you're getting the most efficient use out of those systems. And we've spoken about a bit about it here. A lot of it's about process mapping and improvement. And then the other bit is what I call a relationship manager, and whether that's a technology relationship manager or someone, that it's someone either on the technology side or the lawyer side who understands the other sort of side of the fence. So it can really put those sort of two teams together. We sort of find it within our organization, our knowledge and practice support lawyers do a great job of that. So they're sort of evolving themselves from being, you know, that predominant knowledge lawyer, you know, searching for precedents, all that sort of stuff, into they are really becoming the relationship managers for us. So they're spending a lot of time out in the practice group, and they're actually identifying a lot of the things that we need to be doing. And then they'll get the appropriate teams in touch with the lawyers. And that's working quite well, actually.
I would echo what Mitch said. I think he hit it dead on. First and foremost, you've got the data analytics piece. And, you know, some firms think they don't have big data, but whether it's medium or small, the kind of data analysis is shifting. The kind of stuff that you can simply do in a traditional finance group with a spreadsheet and so on is no longer really, I think, sufficient. So some firms actually have people with data analytics in the title. You've got people that specialize in pricing. And I think the other parts, again, Mitch got right, was the analyst workflow type of individual. And I think we're even seeing some firms start to bring on and pay more attention to UI UX. So design-oriented individuals. You know, if we're going to build an app, if we're going to put together this intranet or extranet for a client, and we want to make sure that the interface is such that it's really easy to use. So I think certainly UI UX is a something that, with the advent and rise of Apple apps and so on, you know, people want stuff that's easier and better to use. And that's a new field for law firms to get into.
Yeah, we've seen a dramatic shift, or the want to shift to a more robust UI UX or clean UI UX. I have a current project where we're recreating our intranet, and had a huge focus on UI UX because of the technology we're using. I think that doesn't really have a client demand because it's just internal, but I think it'll be a start and hopefully drive some conversation from there.
We're doing exact same thing. Our intranet project, we took kind of a left field piece. We're moving to Azure, so a lot of our systems are moving from internal to external, cloud-based. And so we started with our intranet. Actually, the first 2 months, we were looking at, you know, what is the standard attorney desktop configuration, twin 24-inch monitors, and, you know, what do we want to put in the intranet and so on. And it was going okay, but when I took the project and kind of flipped it on its ear and said, well, you know what, really what we need to be designing for is the 4-inch to 5-inch iPhone screen. So let me tell you, when you flip that to look at it from that perspective, attorneys really focus in on what is really important to the intranet. Because when you've got a big screen, it's like, okay, well, we'll put everything up there. You're talking about a 4-inch screen, it's like, okay, well, I want to be able to see this first. I want to drill down here to see that, and then that's it. So I agree wholeheartedly that the intranet and how we're utilizing the technologies and where we want it to be available to the attorneys, you know, on their phones, outside the office, is a major factor in changing up how we even look at that front.
Yeah, I think there was a great thread on one of the connected communities recently on, do you need an intranet? And I think a resounding response was yes. And those people that responded yes had very valid reasons. And I think you brought up a very good one, was the form factor. You know, what is the experience when you're using on a mobile device versus Surface or a 24-inch monitor? I think the other layer that I'm really working and pushing towards is the ability to have that type of connected community and that collaboration online, because that information that's shared is then searchable. And then when a new hire comes in and they have the same question as someone 2 years ago, they can find that information, and it creates more of a connected environment.
I just had a meeting yesterday with our managing partner and a couple of our attorneys on that very subject. How do we connect better internally? You know, and Facebook was the example. You know, we do all these things in Facebook without thinking, how can we utilize social media internally to connect better? And I think that's a key piece.
I completely agree. And I think that this kind of brings us to our next topic, is generational differences. Are there differences in candidates you're trying to bring in? Are there differences in the multiple generations we have in the workforce? And one pet peeve I have to bring up is, I'm a millennial, okay? I was born in 1982. I'm actually the millennial. So I get so fed up with the number of emails and things that cater to millennials, because I'm ready for the next generation that's going to come into the workforce, but also have a deep, deep appreciation that I'm one of, you know, a small segment of millennials currently at my law firm. There are other generations at this law firm currently. So how do you handle that? How do you handle the generations with regard to skill sets needed at your firm for future planning or succession planning?
Well, it's an interesting question. I mean, I'm on the edge of baby boomer and Gen X, I guess, is the next one. It's interesting, and I'll throw out one of my pet peeves. People talk about, you know, millennials being these hardcore computer folks with all these skills. And quite frankly, it's not true. They really don't understand anything about the technology. Are they using it? Yes. Are they understanding it? No. And so you end up with, how do you take that approach where got an attention span that's short, got the app generation, and this is one of the things where, you know, I have to launch into my speech every time an attorney asks me about why our document management system isn't as easy to use as Dropbox. It's like, okay, well, let's start with the fact that Dropbox does three things. Our document management system does 103 things. And so, yes, it's not quite the same level of ease of use. But I think getting people to work together, you know, you have the whole, don't tell me how to do something, but rather just tell me what you want done and cut me loose and I'll take care of it. I mean, there's still, I think, again, it's probably my baby boomer holdover, there are still good practices that anybody can learn in terms of working in the business.
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one. The way I look at it, I don't look at it as a generational difference. To me, it's more around mindset. And Jeff mentioned there's people that consume technology. That doesn't mean they understand it. And when you look at the mindset, someone who's a baby boomer or a Gen Xer, which I am, really has an understanding of the technology more so than a Gen Y. But the Gen Y brings a different skill to the table. So I personally don't see it as a generational difference. I see it as a mindset difference. And so I've got sort of within my team, anyone from a millennial up to a baby boomer, sort of almost ready for retirement. But what I find is the people with the very similar mindsets, doesn't matter what generation they're from, they work very well together and they co-opt. And the differences I have in my team aren't generational. It's around mindset. So trying one sort of side having a specific mindset, truly deeply understanding technology against, say, another group who has the mindset of it all being about the UX or how someone uses something, but not necessarily what's underlying. They come from different avenues. It doesn't mean one's right or one's wrong, but you know, the way sort of I see it operate is it's not strictly along those generational lines.
Well, and I'll add in that I think part of it for me has been an education piece where, you know, I deem it a success if I can go to a senior partner and talk to him about a workflow or a technology or something that we want to implement. And he looks at me and says, you know, that's not for me, but I get how it could be useful for other people, so let's proceed. So, you know, I get you get somebody that maybe will not use whatever you're talking about developing, but at least you've opened up their mind to the point where, okay, well, I can see that for different generation, or to use Mitch's term, a different mindset. Now, I'm not about to change my mindset, but okay, I recognize that there are other mindsets out there, and so that could be valuable to me in terms of them using it as opposed to me using it.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you both said, and I think that as long as you can create an environment where the work is stimulating and challenging, have good teams of people, and then recognize those people for the work they do, then you'll potentially keep people longer so they aren't looking, you know, 1 foot out the door, and bring in new, fresh talent to set yourself up for success. So the last point we had was, where do we anticipate all of this going with so many legal startups coming into the market?
So legal startups is an interesting thing. There are a lot of them, and they do a whole range of stuff, and some are coming in to replace, you know, entire functions, or others are a specific process. What I've sort of found is you sort of got to find the value of technology. So legal startups can be, you know, what we call a traditional, well, not even, it's not traditional because it's a legal startup, but new law. So it's, you know, a smaller practice that's a little bit more nimble, or it's a legal startup that is offering a technology or a solution. Gilbert and Tobin have done a couple of interesting things. So for example, we took a strategic stake in a new law practice called Legal Vision here in Australia, with the view that, you know, we sort of serve the corporate end of the market, higher sort of scale firms, and they're sort of a very, you know, smaller or lower end. But what we're sort of seeing, you know, they're sort of starting to move up because there's more growth available to them. But at the same time, we're now using them with our clients and introducing them as sort of, you know, a new law process within their panel selection firm. So they can get the same work done that they might be paying one of our competitors a lot of money for, a lot cheaper, by using new law. When it comes to like legal tech startups, a lot of technology out there. So I think you've got to want to have a need to look at a new legal tech startup. Like, you can keep across a lot of it, but not all of it, because there's so much. But, you know, you've really got two decisions yourselves. And from my aspect, that is, you know, you've got the build or you've got the buy. So, you mean, there's some really interesting technology coming out of some of these startups. And it's, what does that offer my firm? And if it does offer something to my firm, or do we co-opt it? So we bring that in as part of our technology offering. Or, you know, I mean, we might sort of say, hey, that's a great product, but it's not so much for us, that, you mean, it might be for one of our clients. And we've done a little bit of that as well, where we sort of introduce technology startup companies or other technology companies into sort of some of our clients, because, you know, it solves a problem for them. So we're sort of making that meet. But, you know, and then it goes, as I said, that build v buy thing. So you've got to look at the product. Is it of value to you? And is it something you're already looking at doing? Can you build it cheaper and better? And it really comes down to that business case argument, in my view.
I think Mitch is 100% right. It really boils down to, what are the problem or problems being solved or resolved, or the pain points removed, and does it have value for what you're doing? I mean, there are some things that we've looked at and that's really cool, jazzy tech, and you look at it and say, okay, well, I'd have to increase my profitability by X just to break even on you know, utilizing this particular piece of technology, and that's not going to happen. So, you know, they're going to have stuff that's going to be viable. You're going to have stuff that's not going to be viable. One of the things that I think is kind of interesting is, and I would kind of blame it on this app mentality, a lot of the legal startups seemingly are, you know, single purpose organizations, or they're fixing a single problem. And one of the things that I've seen, as you look at that, if that problem is in a set or series of issues or in a workflow in your firm, sometimes these startups, it's very hard to integrate that single purpose solution when it's got to integrate into a broader environment. So that's, to me, has been one of the interesting things and kind of side effects of this new generation of startups.
And I would just add, you know, I think it's an exciting time. There's lots of new apps and new things you're hearing about with regards to legal startups. I hope it challenges the larger vendors to be more competitive with their offerings. I think at the same time, they might buy some of these smaller legal startups. But to Mitch's point, you know, if there are tools we can add to our tool belt to really expand our offering at a lower price, maybe for one specific thing, I look forward to the future of it. It's an exciting time. Well, I think that does it for our podcast today. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Mitch and Jeff, for collaborating on this. To our listeners, we hope you enjoyed the conversation and hopefully learned something new. So thanks for joining us, and we encourage you to continue the conversation on the Connected Community.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.